You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Yeah, and welcome to the program. It's like I was telling you about earlier. There have been so many things going on at the council, particularly at the website and there's newsletter. And if you missed it, it's just a shame. Now, particularly if there's a student or a teacher in your group, there's some things available and some information available that I'm not sure you see anywhere else. And I'm not even sure why this particular publication is as good as it is, because it belongs on a magazine rack in every island in the area. Sylvia Spaulding is here. She is the communications officer for the council and joins us from time to time talking story. And we got a couple of good ones, because you mentioned to me earlier, there are a lot of stories in here that, number one, people don't know about, and number two, they're pretty good.
Thank you.
Yeah, what started this whole concept of this newsletter in the first place?
Well, Kitty, the director, you know, she started this way back when the council began, back in the late 70s and 80s.
No, but what I mean is it got a renewed energy. Even though the internet is big and your website is fantastic, there's a lot of parts of the fishery that maybe is not that, you know, copacetic with a computer on their label. But when these go out into the Pacific, it's like a Bible.
Right. Well, we used to send it out all as printed copy. Now we only send out printed copies if somebody asks for them, and most of it's being sent out electronically. So we have both hard copy and web copies available.
Okay, we got a lot of stuff that's in it in this current one, but there's also some other things going on. And one of the things you're going to do by going to wpcouncil.org is learn about the upcoming meetings. Sylvia and I will speak about them in just a little bit. But I wanted to get back on this thing because one thing that I opened up, it was a map. It said the fisheries role elevated in New Guam, CNMI, and administrations. It's pretty interesting to me because you see this part of the planet and everything is listed, and the reason why we're looking at this specifically, Sylvia, is because there are people that don't understand that some places in that part of the globe don't have the ability to catch the fish that they're entitled to catch.
Right. So, Mike, you're looking at a map that shows Northern Mariana Islands and Guam, and all around it, at the U.S. EEZ around those two, you don't see any fishing. We're looking at the Global Fishing Watch, which shows satellites. It shows, you know, all the fishing that's occurring. But then right on the border and outside of that, those U.S. EEZ around those American territories, there's plenty of fishing going on by foreign fishermen. And we're saying, well, why aren't we doing U.S. fishing in this U.S. EEZ? And a lot of it has to do with they're still developing their fisheries there. Now, at one point, Japan used to occupy those territories, and there was fishing going on.
But, of course, they had their motherships, and they had the ability to catch and process the fish right there.
Right. Yeah. So anyways, as we were talking, one thing is our fishery here in Hawaii, sometimes we buy quota from these territories, and that money they use is for them to make ice houses, for them to improve their ramps, for them to repair boats that got destroyed by typhoons. Did I say ice houses?
Yeah, and you know, by the way, here in Hawaii, those of you that are listening here locally, you know how easy it is. I mean, if you forget your ice, no problem. The gas station by the boat ramp, load them up. Now, it may cost you more than you want to spend, but you can get it. Some of these people were trucking their trailers and their ice 50 or 60 miles or more just to find a boat ramp. And you would be amazed at how productive somebody can be when they can go from their backyard to the ramp down the street instead of having to go on, 2 hours in their car.
Right. And some of these they're smaller outer islands, here also in American Samoa. And so they did not have ice available. And yet, like in American Samoa, there is a new company there that's trying to ship fish out to California. Mm-hmm. So there's opportunities for the fishermen, the small Aaliyah fishermen, to go out fishing. But they need to have the quality of fish that U.S. Fisheries demand.
Demand, sure. Yeah. And there's another thing too, gang, and that is when Sylvia's talking about what happened is some of these guys are so small, they can't develop a market because the market expects delivery. So if you start telling somebody you're going to get them, 100 tons a week, and you come in with 14 tons next week, they're going to find another place to buy their fish. They can't count on you.
Right. Consistency is important.
Well, you can't get consistency until you make the effort worth the time. So if you're trailering 50 miles or more in a trailer with bearings that might break and weather that might get bad and things that you can't catch fishing, and when you get there's more surf than you thought there was, now at least you can sort of, okay, I'll go out. I know I'm going to catch my 100. I'll come in and sell you my 100. But it's not just that, is it? Isn't it also more of a thing that we realize the developing that needs to go on there, and there's no money for it. So
right, and a part of it too is also training. You know, training mm-hmm. the fishermen. Mm-hmm. You know, to how to ice the fish, and you know how to take care of business. So you know, and all that. So that's what the council tries to help with. But again, also some of the funds for that is coming from what Hawaii buys the quota from these different territories.
One guy asked me, so the next time you talk about that, please address the decision making on pricing and methods of payment and all of that stuff. So if all of a sudden, if we're going to quote trade quotas or sell quotas, that means whatever their quota was for an agreed upon amount of money going into their fishery, whatever, that's then our boats or somebody else's boat can go and catch those fish.
Okay, so what the quota is the Pacific Ocean is divided into two international management groups that set tuna quotas because mm-hmm. tunas are highly migratory. So in the Western and Central Pacific Ocean, it's the Western and Central Pacific Fisheries Commission, or the WCPFC. And so in those areas, there's a lot of territories and small island developing states, you know, like Tuvalu and, mm-hmm. you know, really small islands. And so they actually have no quota set for them. And the mm-hmm. U.S. territories and other, you know, French territories mm-hmm. and stuff, they're considered the same way because they recognize they are developing and they have aspirations to develop their fisheries. So they have no quota set internationally. However, the Fishery Council, which, mm-hmm. you know, I work for, the federal, we recognize, you know, that we should set quotas. And so we actually have a quota right now for 2,000 metric tons for each of the territories. And out of that, they can sell 1,000 metric tons only to the Hawaii longline or the U.S. longline fisheries that are mm-hmm. federally permitted. So gotcha. There's a cap on how much they can sell mm-hmm. and to whom they can sell it to. The negotiations on the price is between the government yeah. and that longline
fishery. Who's responsible for monitoring the program once it's been established and going? Uh-huh. Who takes a look at it?
Oh, you know what? You should ask that to Eric Kingman stuff, but okay, there is federal
by
oversight.
The way, when we do get Eric in here, Eric with the council is in charge of the fishery with enforcement, uh-huh. and so he carries a big stick. I mean, and it's fortunate because he's like 6'8". He's a pretty big dude. But no, seriously, I think that's important because I know a lot of people here that say I don't want to follow the rules because there's this other banana that comes down here every week in his Jeep and he takes what he wants. Uh-huh. Well, you know that won't happen if you call and say, hey. I don't want to jam this guy up, but I'm obeying the rules and he's not. Somebody better come look at this guy.
Well, see, with the longline fishery, you know, they are heavily monitored. Yeah. And so, I mean, they know how much they catch every day every day because, you know, the National Marine Fisheries Service projects when they're going to hit their quota limit, you know, and so then the fisheries close down. So, you know, there is coverage on their and also coverage when they come to port. But what I wanted to say about that, too, is the WCPFC actually met here in Honolulu, mm-hmm. you know, recently. Yeah. And the Hawaii did try through the – so Hawaii is part of the U.S. fishery – did try to up their quota because the Hawaii quota is only 3,554 metric tons. And other countries have like – Japan has like 17,765 metric tons. And Korea, Chinese Taipei, China, Indonesia mm-hmm. – all
it's
of them
huge.
Have more tons than we do, and they don't even catch what they're mm-hmm. Allocated. And there's articles in that convention, mm-hmm. and not to get too detailed, that say that if you know, monitor your fishery, if you provide data, if you know, are a good steward, that should be considered
sure.
when they
yeah.
make their quota. So we were kind of pitching for that, but they didn't go for it. But yeah, but so it's really monitored. Mm-hmm. But talking about smaller fisheries, Mike, we were talking earlier about, you know, the need for data for smaller fisheries.
There, in this month's newsletter, there is a great spread on this. And I was just casually glancing. I learned a couple of things as soon as I opened it up. And the reason we talk about that is because it's on everybody's mind, and yet there's very little that I know that's been done about it. And so when you talk about this, and there's it's double meaning, right? When you talk about sharing your catch, it's give or not to give. Mostly that's information. Mostly that's data, right? And what we're also talking about, but it also folds into fish.
Right. So, you know, how this article is on page 13 talks about, you know, you give your data to your doctor, which he can share with other doctors. You give your data for the Census Bureau, you know. Mm. But fishermen are very reluctant to give their data of, you know, how much they caught, what their effort is, when they went out fishing. And this is what managers need so they can help decide how much fish are out there and what kind of management measures to put
in
place.
Well, I can tell you, gang, Sylvia and I we've been doing this program for many years, and I've never seen it as good as it seems to be getting with some of that. Now, obviously, nobody's going to share their GPS coordinates with where their moy hole is, but there's somewhere in between that. And I think that, and here's where you can warn people. I've tried it, and I don't know if it sticks. And that is, look, if you don't, when you're asked to report what you've caught, if you don't give the right number, I mean a real number, it may come back to bite you later. Because if you're saying you're only catching 12 and you're catching 20, guess what? Your next quota might be 12.
Right, because there's management and scientific uncertainty if you don't know for real what's going on. And what this article points out, because like, you know, we said we help manage not only Hawaii, but also American Samoa, Guam, and the Northern Mariana Islands. You know, in Hawaii, it's only the commercial fishery that has to have a permit and report. In Guam and the CNMI, commercial and non-commercial don't have to. And America Samoa, the commercial has to have a permit, but they don't have to report.
I
mean, these 0 to 3, it belongs to the state or the territory, and yet fish and fishermen go in and out of this state and federal waters. So, you know, we are trying to assist them with trying to get data that's needed.
Well, I can tell you, between Eric Kingma and Mark Fitchett and Remington, Remington's report the other day, the main thing for the listener to get is that it's very well to have these grids set up, but the fish have no idea what grid they're in. So if you say you can get so many from this area, you better be pretty legit where you're catching it. But you can't say next year there's no fish here, because they could be 2 miles away and you don't know it. I mean, so isn't it sort of interesting why in a perfect world we know the geographic boundaries, but the fish has no rules.
Right. But then we, and that kind of is a good segue into our upcoming Fishers Forum, because, you know, there's also other ways that are non-fish, fishermen related, you know, like tagging of the fish. And also there's a lot of research going on trying to get the life history of fish, which is important for the stock assessment, like looking at how old the fish are.
Yep.
And you know, the age at which they become mature and are reproducing. So our upcoming Fisher Forum.
Wait! I saw in the I'm gonna let Sylvia tell you about this, but I saw in the promo for the upcoming forum, you got my attention right away, because it was like drink, sex, boom, full house.
You know? but
you know, it is kind of funny that, you know, there's a lot of things in Hawaii that we all do for granted, like, you know, I don't know, there's probably not a lot of housewives in Central Oregon that can fillet a fish, and you know, or that can, you know, scrape the OEO. We just happen to know these things. So knowing the sex life of a fish, it may sound kind of cuckoo, but it's kind of important.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, so the title of the forum is Food, Sex, and Death. And we even, you know, we have radio and TV ads coming out starting on next week, and they kind of went, you sure you want to use that word?
I think it's great.
Sex, and we're going, well, yes, the sex of the fish, you know. So anyways, look out for those ads, and I hope you come to the forum on March 19th.
Now, this forum has gotten better and better. And I think, once again, let's go back to that article about what, you know, to give or not to give. We also know that there's certain people all the time that no matter how you work it, They're gonna come back from a fishing trip, and they're gonna give to somebody right away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're gonna give to their doctor, like you said, or the dentist. Hey, dentist, I got a toothache. Take this mullet and take a look at my tooth. That's how kind of we operate, you know. But isn't that also part of it? When you get extra, we don't want you to stop your ability of catching fish, but you want to make sure that fish is used. You know.
Right. Yeah. And so that's the thing that the article says also is right now, we're depending on a few fishermen who understand science, who help management by providing their data voluntarily. But when you rely on just a few people to voluntarily, we're not getting the whole field. And we're relying on just a few people when all of us are catching fish. So all of us should report.
Yeah, you now, know, you talked a while ago, we talked both on and off the air, about guys like Roy Morioka. Our Ed Watamura and Roy and some others really participated in some very important stock assessments for bottom fish, taking their fishing time away, knowing that this fish is going to come up and it's going to go back down in the water. It's pretty good because you would think that those would be the least likely to do that, but in fact, they are the most likely to keep the fishery going. Isn't that true?
Right. And see, what the fishermen could provide is when scientists just look at the catch data alone, they don't see when there's highliners leaving the fishery. They don't see, you know, when the weather might have been bad or other factors that might have affected the catch. So by fishermen coming in and providing that information, we can have a better a stock assessment and a better understanding of the fishery. And because of that, there's less uncertainty. And when there's less uncertainty, then the quota can be increased.
Yeah, and you know, it's math. And by the way, let's talk about that. We promoted the forum a little bit. What are the three legs of the stool, I should say. How are we going to sit on it? What's the program going to be like?
Okay, well, our Fisher's Forum changes at different times, but our typical format, which we're following this time, is we have an hour where we have informational booths from eight different organizations where people could come in, look at these information booths, talk one-on-one. We're going to have microscopes and videos running. And then there's going to be some refreshments. They can get tickets for door prizes that we will give away. And this forum, we have great door prizes. Not only has POP given its usual $50 gift certificates, and Nikos have given gift certificates. We have lures from Ricky Tong. But we also have Costa sunglasses. We have Yeti cooler.
Ooh, you got my attention.
And Sam's fishing jacket.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, we have a new member on staff who's come from the East Coast, and he had connections with these organizations. So they are giving us a promo, a cost.
I don't want to say that that's an incentive, but it's kind of an incentive to come down, because one of the things that I get a big kick out of, as some of you know, I've been just honored to be the MC of this program many, many times over the last several years, is that it's a time when you reconnect with particularly a neighbor islander, or even when you can talk story with the CNMI guy, the Samoan guys, because even though it's their night off, a lot of them show up. They want to see what's going on. So the format is very, very casual, and it's so easy because it's in the Ala Moana. And let me give you, don't tell anybody, but the secret for the parking is park at the at the Ala Moana Center, get to that little walk-around bridge. It's pretty easy. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or if you park at the hotel, we will validate.
Yeah.
So anyways, we have the booths, and some of the people I haven't mentioned is the Large Pelagic Research Center, Pacific Islands Fisheries Group, the Pacific Islands Fisheries Science Center, that's the National Marine Fisheries Service, Poseidon Fisheries Research, Pacific Islands Fisheries Group, did I say, the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary.
I got a call from the Coast Guard. Hey, Mike, we come in about it. I said, of course. Don't ask me. So call Sylvia. Yeah, but absolutely they are. And the reason for that is it's the quickest way to disseminate stuff there is. And I've noticed that the last several forums has been pretty, we've had some spirited discussions. I think there's been a little bit more understanding between some parts of the society, and not particularly when we talk about, you know, locally management-based, you know, areas and all of that stuff. We're getting to learn a lot about how that stuff either should or can work.
Right. Yeah. So I know somebody else is going to come back and talk about the Fishers Forum as it gets closer to it, but we are going to be looking at life history of fish, and so we have some three great speakers, so I won't get too much into it, but
yeah, well,
it is.
We want you to mark your date.
And it's in our newsletter, coming back to that.
Okay, now when it says that you've been doing these more on demand, if people want a hard copy, how can they get it?
Well, they can
WPConsul.org,
right.
Start there.
Yeah, they can email us, write to us, call us, and tell us their address, and we'll mail them a copy. Or if they don't mind just getting an electronic copy, they go to our website at WPConsul.org, and there's a area right there where they just enter their email address.
I think it's really cool. And particularly, don't we learn There have been at least, you've heard us talk about on the program, some scholarships and some other things. There's this current vacuuming, if you will, where we have to really get a lot of young people into this thing. And I'm frankly surprised, not only at the people far away, what they're willing to do to get educated and then come back and help their islands or their country.
Right, yeah. So another article in here is about the U.S. Pacific Fisheries Capacity Building Scholarship that we put out for the territories of Guam, America, Samoa, and the Northern Mariana Islands. So we actually will pay for the juniors and senior year or the graduate year, if they're a graduate student, of these territories. Mm-hmm. If they're coming here to study a fisheries-related subject, mm-hmm. So that marine biology like that, from either the University of Guam, HPU, UH Manoa, Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology, or UH Hilo. If they go to one of those four places pursuing a degree that's fisheries related, we will pay for all of that cost for the junior, senior, or graduate year.
I've had the opportunity to talk to a couple of these young people, and just the availability of the ability to apply for something like that, they get so thrilled. I'm so amazed. You know, we talk about here on other programs all the time that we have the brain drain. You know, we have our best and finest. They go to school on the mainland and they just disappear because it's too costly to live here. Uh-huh. Meanwhile, we got these people coming from Samoa and other places. And the first thing they want to do, in my pile, boom, they want to go home and go to work.
Well, yeah, actually part of the scholarship, they
got
to go back and work for their Division of Fish and Wildlife or their Department of Land and Natural Resources. But look at, they have an instant guaranteed job for 1 year for every year they got the scholarship so they can build up their resume that way. Yeah, so we have talk about that in the article also. Now, for Hawaii, we do have other educational opportunities. Mm-hmm. We have an internship program. We have the high school summer course.
We talk about that every year. That's coming up. But I want to tell you, the interns that I've met down there, they're an intern one day and a staff member the next. I mean, they just isn't it amazing how they absorb the opportunity and the task?
Right.
You know, they're not just hanging out. They want to work.
Yeah. They end up being contractors, and pretty soon they're on staff. Yep.
Okay. So these are just some of the things we're just touching on. One of the other things is we mentioned Uncle Roy Morioka a while ago. There's a little story in here about opening up some four of the bottom fish restricted areas. This means science has shown, in the stock assessments that there is probably a little bit more abundance than they thought. So as a result, they're willing to say, okay, let's try it. Let's do this. Let's open this up, see what happens.
Right. So the Board of Land and Natural Resources opened four of the bottom fish restricted fishing areas.
These were called BRFAs before.
BRFAs, yeah. Now, the council has been on record on the advice of its scientific and statistical committee that all of the BRFAs should be open. Mm-hmm. The council doesn't feel like any of them should be closed off, because this fishery is managed under an annual catch limit. So when the BRFAs were made, there was not that annual catch limit. So there is an annual catch limit.
All they did, what they did was, is that they prevented people from catching anything there. You know, and so what if you got your limit, but then you come over to these three or four or five or ten BRFAs and you find, hey, there's a ton of fish here. Uh-huh. You know, we shouldn't penalize you. I know that the council would rather see it a little bit differently, but I'm one of these baby step guys that say, okay, we'll take them. You know, I'm not opining on the behalf of the fishermen, but every time I see something open that's been closed before, and isn't it sort of similar, at least the way some scientists are starting to look at the Papahanaumokuakea? Maybe we should reassess what goes on in that part of the world.
Right. We can go to that, but right now for the BRFAs, the reason the council was for opening all of them, it has to do with monitoring what happened. So you pretty much had a closed area, and if you only open part of them, you know what I mean? It's to be able to use the opening for science. Mm-hmm. So, you know, now if we could get fishermen to report, you know, are they catching more fish there where these areas were closed for years?
Well, let me ask you this, because I think this is germane. The BRFAs as we know them, isn't it the exact same thing about the fish don't know where they are? So they might be in this BRFA today, and they might be 3 months in the open somewhere else, and then they might end up in another one. So we're never going to really know what these places are holding.
Right. Yeah. So that's where tagging comes in and the life history of the fish. You know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, how the council looks at fisheries is, you know, the U.S. imports 90% of its fish from foreign markets, you know, from foreign vessels. Our fisheries are well monitored and they're well studied. So we should, you know, fish our own waters, catch our own fish, build our own economy, keep our fishing culture alive, as long as we make sure that the fish are sustainable.
Almost everybody that doesn't know the fishery like we do, or is not a member of the council or a fishing group, thinks that, oh yeah, we send so much fish to Japan, we send so much fish to the mainland. Listen, we buy fish. We can't supply ourselves.
Right.
You know, I mean, it would be, in an ideal world, everything we've been eating from caught between here and 5 miles of Diamond Head. But that's not going to happen. So therefore, really taking a look at this, just from an economic standpoint as a person, but also a health standpoint, we need our fresh fish.
Right. Yeah. We could get as freshest if we get it from ourselves. And if you take the latest research shows, if you take the commercial and the non-commercial, we're only supplying about 50% in Hawaii. Wow. Again, the mainland, it's like 90% foreign. But again, it's the data. We need the data from the fishermen so that we can have the most accurate information and the true story that's going on.
You know, gang, I used to, when this whole computer world started, when electronic gathering and stuff, Sylvia and I will only have a minute to touch on this in a minute. But I want to tell you, the method of obtaining this information is so much more sophisticated and so much more accurate than it used to be. It just makes plain sense to watch them. Look at just the ways that have changed lately with cameras and with the things that were never available at our fingertips. And some of them are saying, it's the wow factor. They thought that there was 50 of these down there, and there's clearly 150 of them.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, therefore, isn't it safe to assume that the statistical, the gathering stuff is more accurate, so we should rethink some of the areas that we've been talking about?
Yeah, constantly monitor and research. Now, you were talking about the marine monument, too. And so, I mean, the council does have a policy on marine protected areas that we've had for decades. And we just feel like when areas are closed off, one, there should be a reason for them to be closed off. There should be an objective for to meet, you know, whatever the closure is, and then to monitor it to see whether you're meeting the objective. I think this is traditional Hawaiian ways, too. There were kapus, but it was only for certain areas for certain reasons. To show that the council is for marine protected areas, we have created a MPA for the Hancock Seamount.
That's a marine protected area.
Yeah. For seamount and groundfish, because before they became U.S. waters, they were, you know, just open high seas, and the foreign fisheries, especially Japan and Russia, had fished them out, and that fishery has never recovered. So we have made an MPA, Marine Protected Area, and a research area for the Hancock Seamounts, which are on the northern tip of the northwestern Hawaiian Islands.
And the good thing about those, and Sylvia, you explained it, is that science is showing now that if you do that, If you build it, they will come. In other words, there's a way to fix almost all these problems.
Well, yeah, but that fishery recovered.
It takes a long time sometimes.
Right, yeah. So that fishery is really slow in recovering. But, we just feel like if you're going to close something off, you got to have a reason, try and you monitor it to see if it's meeting its objectives or not.
Yeah, and that's a good way to end. I want to make sure, though, that you cement in the minds of people that, you know, it's all good and fine. Go to wpcouncil.org, get the newsletter, do some clipping, some snipping. Use the materials. And I think that if you haven't been there for a while, you're going to be flabbergasted. I think I'm a Tuesday. I have these different groups that I check in on, and I'm amazed at the change in it. So it must mean that somebody is spinning their wheels and burning some midnight oil down at the council.
Right. We also do Facebook and Twitter, YouTube, and we just started an Instagram. So, yeah, just... Start following us.
We're just literally kings of the social media. Hey, Sylvia, one more time. Hold, save the date for the Fishing Forum is?
March 19th.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that next time. Thank you, my dear. We'll see you soon. And for the rest of you, if you want to communicate with the show, it's pretty easy. It's themikebuckshow@gmail.com. But if you want to say something to the council, it's so easy. Go to wpcouncil.org and say, contact me. Contact us. Go do it. So we'll see you next time. In the meantime, hope you have plenty of ice and the water is nice and you have following season, sharp hooks and big bites. Have a great one. See you next time.